This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome, Freecasters. Today, we're talking to Dan Gates. This guy knows it all when it comes to the Colorado Initiative 91. I believe he's with the CWRM, I don't know, something over there in Colorado. He'll explain it here. He has lots of information. And for you people who hound hunt, this is the podcast to listen to because you need to pay attention to what Dan Gates has to say. He's going to go over it all. SaveTheHuntColorado.com. Go make a donation. Help these guys out. Turn that volume up and let's take a listen. All right, we are live. I hope we're live. I think we're live. All right, Chris Watson, Anecdote of a Houndsman. We're doing free casting tonight with Dan Gates, who is spearheading the Colorado Initiative 91. He's with, who are you with? You're with the CRWM, right? You're with a whole, you have
Colorado.
You have a lot of hats.
I got a whole shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I got a whole room of hats, like my wife has shoes, and and I could I can try to wear as many as I can at one time. But the main organization is the Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management.
And I'm going to get a lot of crap tonight because I put a good shirt on. I brushed my beard and my hair tonight. And usually I don't. So what we're going to talk about, you're going to talk about Initiative 91 because I don't think a lot of people know about it. I just found out about it because I was listening. I believe the Bear Grease with Clay Newcomb. And I think you were on. Were you on the Render with him?
No, Chris Powell was with Houndsman XP. He was on, and my name came up. Yep.
Chris Powell's the one that brought you up. I listen to so many podcasts, it's hard for me to keep up. But Initiative 91 in Colorado, basically they did that in Arizona back a couple years ago, 2017, where they tried it. They did the same thing. They put the ocelot, they put the jaguar, they put the link, the Canada lynx on it. They put mountain lion and bobcat, obviously, and it's the same thing as they're doing in Colorado. They couldn't do it in Arizona. I think we beat them. We pushed them aside a little bit. We'll never beat them. They'll just keep coming back.
Yeah, I think you pushed them aside because you helped stop them from gathering signatures.
That a big part of my understanding.
Yeah,
we had one guy out there that was really, I don't remember his name, the big name, but he was out there and he would go to every signing, and I think he was passing out pamphlets that looked like their pamphlets, but told the truth. So he was just, and they would call the cops on him, you know, and that was Hase. That was Humane Society of the United States. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us who you are and what you're doing, and then we'll just go from there. That's why I call it free casting.
Okay. Well, and I appreciate the opportunity, Chris. You know, I'm a lifelong sportsman. And I trap and I hunt and I fish, and I don't designate myself as a trapper or a bow hunter or a turkey hunter or a waterfowl hunter. I'm a sportsman and I do all of that stuff. And I think that if we could get in our heads that we're sportsmen first, just like what I believe we're Americans first, and then whatever ethnic background we would have that falls underneath of that. But we have to have a sportsman flag. We have to have something. And so years and years ago, I started out as the vice president and then the president, and became and still the president of the Colorado Trappers and Predator Hunters Association. I run and operate a wildlife control business and have for the last 37 years. 2017, a buddy of mine and myself formulated the Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management, which is a 501c4 tax-based organization. It's a nonprofit, but the contributions made to us are not tax deductible because we provide advocacy and education, and we're not just, you know, boots on the ground conservation type work. I'm the executive director of that. I also sit on the Colorado Wildlife Council as the chair, and the Colorado Wildlife Council is the education fund that is supplied through $1.50 of each hunting and fishing license sold in the state of Colorado. So that campaign itself is a completely separate campaign than this. That's statutorily bound and regulated because of the way it was set up back in 1998 by sportsmen and women and hunters and anglers. I happen to be the chair of that. I'm also the vice chair of the Colorado Wildlife Conservation Project, which is 31 different organizations from around the state and the country, including all the acronym groups that you could possibly get. And we sit around a table and we formulate plans of action. We strategize. We work hard at the legislature and the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission. And then I'm on a plethora of other things, including the National Trappers Association, Fur Takers of America, and a bunch of other smaller boards and committees as well. The mission of our organization, the primary organization, the Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management, is to enhance, promote, and defend the North American model of wildlife conservation and responsible wildlife management. That's it. We don't pull fences. We don't do habitat work. You know, we're doing the advocacy and the education of the fight.
You know, I wanted to touch on that, your mission, because it doesn't say to enhance, promote, defend the Colorado model. It's the North American model. So you're this, you know, what is it? You're Save the Hunt Colorado. If you gathered a ton of money for that, it's not going with just to Colorado. That's what they're fighting now.
That's what we're fighting now. But our
touched a little bit on that.
yeah, our hope is with the outreach that we've created on this from a bunch of your like-minded comrades on the celebrity podcast side of things, the celebrity hunters and so forth, the organizations like Howl and Sportsman's Alliance and Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, what our hope is that we can build an armament, that we can build a juggernaut, that we can build a playbook and a foundation, a roadmap, so to speak, that if we can be victorious here in Colorado, that we can extend that knowledge and that expertise and that plan of action throughout the Western United States, and then maybe even farther and beyond throughout the rest of the United States. These attempts on attacks and assaults of our way of life, our wildlife management objectives, our history and our tradition of livelihoods. This isn't singular to Colorado. And this is not a bobcat and a mountain lion deal here in Colorado. We'll get into that when I discuss Initiative 91 and another initiative that they recently brought up called Initiative 101, which similarly mirrors 91, but they weren't happy with what we accomplished at the title board. But that being said, we hope to build something that when we are victorious here in November of 2024, that other states that have other initiatives, whether it's legislative, citizens petitions through their game and fish departments, or a ballot initiative, they can use a similar roadmap to turn around and conquer and divide the opposition to a point to where they are just like what we hope to be. We've lost some things in the past. We haven't been as well organized as what we would like. Some of that is due to my predecessors, all of our predecessors. It was a different landscape back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and we didn't adapt appropriately in the late 90s and 2000s and up into the 2010s. And that's why a buddy of mine, Chris Journey, with the Colorado Conservation Alliance, and myself formulated this organization, because we knew we had to do something that was going to be bigger, better, meaner, faster, stronger, and something that other organizations couldn't do because of their tax status. A 501c3 has specific tax requirements that they can do and can't do. A 501c4 has a lot more leniency on what they can do for advocacy and campaigning and so forth. We're not an issues committee. We can lobby, and that's a good point, Chris, because we're the only organization in the state of Colorado that has full-time lobbying representation at the Colorado State Capitol. None of the other ones have. They pay into our system. They might go speak on a subject matter. They might go speak on a bill, but we've got three full-time lobbyists at the Capitol working on our behalf as clients. We are the clients that they represent us from the sportsmen, the hook and bullet community in Colorado, which includes every single person, whether they buy a license that, you know, for archery season or muzzleloading season or rifle season or whatever.
You know, a lot of people, I've been asked this, I have a partner, and she said, well, what does that have to do with Arizona? I said, it has everything to do with Arizona. You've talked about this before in another podcast and interviews, is if they don't do it there, or if they do it there, if they get it past there, they're done there. They're going to go somewhere else, which is going to be New Mexico. Utah. Yeah. Utah's next. You know Utah's next because of their, I don't know why they did it, their little freelance, kill every line you can catch deal. But how does that affect people? That's what people ask. Well, what does Colorado have to do with us? How do you explain to them?
I can tell you. So the way the political structure has been here in Colorado for the last 23 years is a playbook and roadmap of what we would consider the opposition. It's a non-use, it's a non-cruel, non-humane, non-consumptive use coalition of like-minded groups and individuals from all over the country with a lot of flipping money. And their ideology is to keep us off the landscape, keep us from being able to recreate and harvest or chase and pursue game. And it even goes into the agriculture industry. And if you look at the connections and the crossroads between those two things, They want the ag guy off the landscape. They want us off the landscape. They don't want us to use hounds, but they don't want us to use electronic calls. They don't want us to use archery equipment. GPS. They don't want us to turn around. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it is. And so how we are doing things in Colorado, we have fought formidably for the last 10 years to keep the wolves at bay. No pun intended. We're having the wolves being dropped on the ground unless this lawsuit turns around and keeps them out. But we have done everything within our power, but the political demographics have changed so substantially. A lot of it happened over COVID. A lot of it happened 10 years prior to COVID. But in 2000 itself, we had 2.9 million people in the state of Colorado. We've got 5.9 million people in the state of Colorado now. 23 years, another 3 million people. A lot of those people came from California, Washington, and Oregon, bitching and complaining about what was happening on the West Coast, turn around and come here and want to bring their ideologies and want to bring their perspectives and their opinions here that they'd left there that they were bitching and complaining about. And you in Arizona are not seeing anything any different. You're seeing people move from all over the country to Arizona, just like Texas is, just like New Mexico is. I mean, and I'm not talking about ones that are coming across the border. I'm talking about ones that are actually just here
that
from
is
other states.
California is the border.
Yeah,
when they come from California, that's a whole nother country. You know, that's one thing you don't do in Arizona, is say I'm from California.
Well, that was one of the old jokes when I was a kid, that Texans always came here to hunt. And now it's you know the difference between Texans and Californians, and Texans go home. Californians don't. And so they move here, they have a different perspective, but then they feed into the political machine that feeds that political perspective. They come from this different ideology of maybe I sit on this side of the fence or maybe I sit on that side of the fence, until they actually start paying attention to politics and listening to their candidates, doesn't matter from what party. And when that becomes part of the mainstream conversation, I mean, you say enough lies enough times and people start to believe them as truths, as we see on many different forefronts. Misinformation and misguidance on wildlife is a key component of their victories, because they get most of the airtime and they get most of the political time because their politicians are in line and lockstep with their ideologies, just because somebody is pushing the effort to try to accomplish what they want.
You know, and before we get into Initiative 91, now, I'm pretty sure everybody knows the base of it, because everybody's kind of had trouble with it. I know Arizonans know the same thing, but social media, as far as believing, not just people posting kind of dumb stuff they shouldn't post because it, you know, the other side will take it, but just believing. I think it was you telling me a story. Someone heard something and thought, it happens all the time. They hear it on Facebook. It happens on Facebook or Instagram. It's true. Mm-hmm. That's one of our enemies too.
Some of the information that I've been made privy to over the course of the last 8 years, specifically the last 6.5 with my involvement is on the Colorado Wildlife Council. And the exact number I'll probably misspeak, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 68% to 73% of women between the ages of 18 to 34 get 80% of their news off of Instagram and Facebook. Now stop and think about that. When our target audience is between 18 and 34 of who we actually need to get to our side of the fence, they don't have to want to hunt. They don't have to want to turn around and go lion hunt or bobcat trap or hunt a deer and elk. We need them to understand why we hunt, how it's regulated, how it's managed, how it's funded, to where they can see that it benefits them and their experience in the outdoors. If they're believing 99% of the crap that they see on social media and get 80% of their news off of Facebook or Instagram or whatever else social media forum is out there, we have a problem, because people just put stuff out just for the sake of putting it out. It doesn't have to have any facts whatsoever.
No, and what they're going to show, what the other side will always show. I was on Facebook and I seen a bad post. Bear got killed, hits every branch, bounces, they walk up and they kill it. And I had commented on it and it started kind of a big fight. That other side, they will take that. They will take the bad and absolutely propaganda. Yeah. They won't take the good. You know, the kid was a special needs kid, but they didn't have to show that. They didn't have to show it that way. You know, so they will take the bad. And the biggest argument is First Amendment. Well, you're about to lose some other rights because of your first right of saying or posting whatever you want.
You know, there's one thing that a guy told me not too long ago. It's probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I think it was before COVID. And he was a private investigator. And he was commenting. He's a sportsman. But he was commenting on the social media components. So when somebody harvests something, a lot of times before they even get back to the truck, there's a picture of it and it's on some sort of social media site. You know, they had to flex their arms and turn around and hoop and holler. I don't have a problem with any of that stuff. I mean, hunting, as much time and effort and money that we contribute as a community into hunting, we should be proud of it. But the perception of other people that don't know the circumstances around that harvest is what hurts us. And the investigator told me that you could have 10 people sitting in an intersection and watch the exact same accident, and you'll get 9 different stories.
That's
from the exact same thing as they saw.
Absolute
and,
fact.
And so when somebody sees, when somebody sees a bear falling out of a tree and sees it and hits the ground, and you have 10 people or 10,000 people or a million people or 10 million people, they're all going to have a different perspective. Now you're going to get guys on our side that says it's their right and their First Amendment. You're going to get other guys that turn around and hoop and holler and make sure that everybody congratulates each other. Nice job and so forth. But those type of things feed into the antagonistic behavior of the extremist, because then what they do is they harness that instance and they publicize it for their benefit to that middle of the road audience that we all talk about. And we all know we got people all over the place that, well, I don't necessarily disagree with hunting. I don't want to do it myself, but I don't want to stop you from doing it until they see something like that, because then they're told by their buddy, who is more of an extremist, how bad, how cruel, how inhumane this is. And then that person who's the middle of the roader sitting on the fence, who we thought maybe we could sway on our side, sees the video. He's been listening to us tell the story. Maybe sees a still shot. Maybe sees a picture. Maybe sees our kid harvesting the first buck or whatever in film. You put it in video, that's a completely different scenario. And especially when you don't get a chance to tell the whole story. Everybody's video is, you know, what is it, 15 seconds, 30 seconds? It's a clip out of something. And now that person that sits in the middle is supposed to determine what happened the 8 hours before and what happened the 8 hours after, and put that together and decide how good or bad or indifferent that 30-second clip or that 15-second clip is.
And they won't. They won't do it. They won't put it together.
Just, that old deal, a picture is worth 1,000 words, a video is worth 1,000,000.
Initiative 91, let's kind of break into that, a little bit of the language. I want to break into that too. I want to talk about what they're trying to do. And you've talked about this before, title and what's the other language? Title language and then
We got title language through the Supreme Court. We got title language through the title board, which is an arm of the Secretary of State. And now we have appealed to the Supreme Court, which is an arm of Colorado state government through the Secretary of State.
And then you have the language that's in the book. Oh, go ahead.
And you got the language that's actually in the book. That's the language in the measure. That would be
measure
would
language.
Be the language in the book itself. Yep. Yeah. And so there's 26 states that allow initiatives to be filed similar to what Colorado does. It's very easy. I mean, if I wanted to start an initiative to make it illegal to walk your beagle down the street, I could make it initiative. It depends on how I wanted to present that to the
title board. Be
careful
saying beagles.
The legislative council, the title board. Yeah.
We got Missy Fix on tonight. You know,
I mean, well,
she's
okay.
A beagle lady. Missy Fix is a beagle lady.
If I wanted
lady.
To make a ballot initiative to keep her from walking her beagle after night, I could do that. Now, would it pass? Probably not. Could I get it on the ballot? Maybe. But I could damn sure get it through the title board. I'd still have to go out and get the signatures to be able to do it. So our process is very, very easy and lenient. And that's something that 25 other states besides Colorado has the opportunity to deal with. I mean, other states have the same opportunities to put nefarious type language out there that everybody looks at and goes, what the hell does this have to do with anything? We get to a point in this process. How we got to this process is back in 2019, these same individuals, not Cats Aren't Trophies, but other individuals associated with this Cats Aren't Trophies organization, came to the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission and filed a citizen's petition to ban the harvest of bobcats. We unanimously defeated that in 2019. Now, that's with this governor's commission appointments. And this governor is not a favorable governor, and nor is his husband, both of which are animal rights extremists. The husband more than the governor, but both animal rights extremists.
Did you say his husband?
His husband.
Okay. Yes. I was just making sure I caught that.
Yeah. His husband. So And the governor himself, at one time, was a member of Congress, representing the state of Colorado, and was the, from my understanding, one of the most wealthy congressmen in the country. He got done with that, and he came here, ran for governor. Lo and behold, he ends up to be governor. But he brings with him some ideologies of other individuals and entities and organizations about agriculture, about wildlife management, and the plan of action started in place prior to him becoming governor here. But I digress. I'm going backwards to get to the story where we're at now. They didn't like the answer that they got from the Parks and Wildlife Commission, which was appointed by this governor. So they came back again in 2020 during COVID. And we defeated them again, unanimously, with the governor's commission appointments. They came back again at the same level in 2021. And they decided to pull the initiative because things were looking unfavorable and they didn't want a three strikes and you're out type deal. So they pulled the initiative. So we're considering that to be a victory because they went through all the proper processes and procedures right before the meeting was to be held, a week before the meeting that was to be held. They pulled the initiative. So we knew that we'd kick their asses three times in a row. Then in November of 21, we heard that there was something rumbling in the jungle as far as the legislature was concerned. And lo and behold, the first day of the session in 2022, they brought Senate Bill 31, which would have banned the harvest of mountain lions, bobcats, and lynx, and they put it through the Colorado State Legislature.
Is this the harvest altogether, not just with hounds? Or
that was everything. That was just a complete hunting ban. Take it away, no matter what. We had 17 days to prepare for that. Normally, during the legislative session, you got a hell of a lot more time than that. But they dropped it on the first day, and it was actually to be run through the Senate Agriculture Committee on February 3rd. And we rallied the troops, and we turned around and did our battle cries, and we got everybody together. We put 350 people at the Colorado State Capitol, and through the Colorado Senate Ag Committee, which we were told that we would lose 4-1, just because all the lobbyists had already counted the votes, we won 4-1, and we sent them back packing. Now you fast forward to September 22nd of 2023, with more commissioners to their favor on the Parks and Wildlife Commission, but they didn't go that route. They decided to turn around a ballot initiative to where if they could get through the legal steps and the processes and procedures to be able to have the voters of Colorado vote on lion, bobcat, and lynx harvest, which lynx is the red herring because lynx are federally and state protected anyway. So there is no harvest of lynx anyway.
Explain why they put that in there. There's a reason for that.
They put it in there because they said on the hot mic during the rehearing through the title board, when asked that question, why did you put lynx on there? They said, because if it ever gets delisted, we never want them to be harvested, period. Now, we all know from a science-based wildlife management perspective that if they're delisted, that means that they're recovering, but they don't want any harvest, period, of anything. So as they went through those processes, through the legislative council, through the first title board hearing, through the Secretary of State's office, we had the chance to appeal during the rehearing. And I believe the rehearing was on November 8th. On that, we argued our side, gave our briefs. I didn't do it myself. We hired some really high-end attorneys along with our strategy firm that we hired.
With big words, which
drains pocketbooks really, really fast. I'll tell you that. And to the tune of which we have already invested about $160,000 in the last 7 weeks on those two processes to be able to get us to the level where we're at. Well, the main reason that we did all that, Chris, is because the way that the initiative was written, it was ban on trophy hunting. And we knew that trophy hunting was a cliche type phrase that would resonate with the general public because who wants anybody to turn around and take trophy animals?
Well, you've went through, and this is, I'm glad you brought the trophy up because there's no classification for a trophy. Am I correct? This is, you guys kind of busted them out on this.
Yeah, there's no classification in statute under trophy. And to the best of our knowledge, there's not any definition of trophy hunting in North America.
And I've heard you guys explain it really well. when he said when a 10-year-old shoots his first rabbit, that's his trophy. So does that count? You know,
well,
when you shoot a spike,
the
first deer, that's a trophy.
That's the, and that's the way that they've coined it, is anything that could be considered a trophy. Well, we knew that trophy to the general public was not the message that needed to go through. So we argued about trophy. We argued about single subject on the title. We argued about a bunch of misnomers that were in the measure. And the title board agreed with us that trophy needed to be stricken or redacted from the title. Now, keep in mind, for people that don't understand, because I damn sure didn't until we started playing with this process, all the title board can do is address the title, hence called the title board. Whatever is in the measure, they can't deal with, or they can't provide an objection to, unless that substantiates some sort of a single subject clause where you can only have one title. You can have only one issue on one title on one ballot. So if it has to do with three or four different things, the title board could say, this is not single subject. We're going to kick this back. You need to define it down. You need to narrow it, the scope of the title. Well, the measure itself can be as convoluted as what one wants. And even in the measure, it specifically still defines trophy hunting. But to us, we still consider that to be somewhat of a victory, because I think the figures are pretty close that 85% of the general public, the voting public, won't read that blue book that comes out during your ballot. They'll read the ballot title and they'll say, do I want this to happen or do I not want this to happen? But they don't go into the 9-page dissertation and the fiscal notes about what encompasses whether trophy hunting should be banned or not.
It's no different than Facebook or Instagram, where if you have a good thumbnail and you have, or a good title, they're going to click on it. So when you have a title that says save the animals for conservation, heck, who's not going to vote for that?
Yeah, exactly. But if you say ban trophy hunting, well, who's going to not vote for that? And so that was a key component of our argument. The kicker is, and we've got this in writing, in their appeal and their briefs to the Supreme Court. And in that context of what is actually the intended definition of trophy hunting in the measure, not in the title, in the measure, it specifically says trophy hunting is defined as intentionally killing, pursuing, wounding, or entrapping a mountain lion, bobcat, or lynx. Well, I don't know how you figure it, but intentionally pursuing and killing is hunting. And they have come out in the brief, in their appeal to our appeal, that this is a hunting ban. This is not a trophy hunting ban. This is a hunting ban. And so we went through those processes. We have opportunities to push it to the Supreme Court, because we're still concerned about single subject and the confusion of some of the language in the title, because it's not really defined. I mean, I've handed it to a dozen people that are a lot smarter than I, and they look at it and go, what are they trying to accomplish here? I mean, we know what the intent is, but it doesn't explain that wholeheartedly to where it's undeniably, you know, explicit to where the voter could interpret it by just saying, instead of saying, I'm not sure whether I should check yes or no on this damn thing or not. We process that through the Supreme Court. Now, we probably won't get an answer from them on the title ruling until mid-January to maybe the first part of February. Some of that has to do with holidays. Some of it has to do with logging problems and scheduling problems with the Supreme Court. Lo and behold, getting into the next subject of this, as we're going through that process, then we were notified that another measure had been filed, Initiative 101, by similar individuals from the same organization, which is a much more convoluted interpretation of what they originally tried to get. And if you read it, I mean, even road scholars that we've given it to, who are wildlife attorneys, are like, I have no idea what the hell they're trying to say. A 4-page document that they came up with indicated everything that was in that they were attempting to try to get out of the first measure that we thwarted because of the title board process. They were trying to reinstall either in the title or the measure, in addition to a bunch of other things. Go ahead.
If you're trying to catch a coyote, you don't just set one trap. You set five traps.
Right.
So if the coyote misses that first trap, which is 91,
right,
then you go to then they go to the 101 trap, you know. But real quick, I want to clear this up. This steamer asked, until the right gets as hard or as mean as the left, it will get worse. Now, I've heard you talk about how close these votes are. So it's not a right or left thing, is it?
No.
It's really close. No, so it's not like the right saying, yeah, we're not going to have that. And the left is saying, yeah, no, we're going to do it. It's like...
So here, the statistics and numbers, and if you look at what responsive management with Mark Duda out of Virginia has done, and this is pretty consistent with what we've come up with in our polling data and along with our contractor that I work with for the Wildlife Council, there's about 10% of the public that are hardline sportsmen and women. There's about 10% of the public that are hardline animal extremists. Then there's about 10% on each side that I'm kind of an extremist, but, you know, I could agree with some of these things. And then there's some sportsmen that, you know, I hunt this, but, you know, Gates, I really don't give a rat's ass about lions and bobcats. I mean, they're so right there, 10% and 10% and 10%. So there's 60% that's in the middle that sit on one side or the other. Out of that 60%, only about 45% are the registered voters. So now you turn around and get it down to a point to where your target audience is confined to such a small group of individuals, even though it's a broad number in the state. You know who's going to likely vote for you and who's likely going to vote against you. What you're trying to do is convince the people in the middle, the registered voters in the middle, because I don't really give a rat's ass if somebody's not registered what their opinions are, because they're not going to turn around and make a vote, and they're not going to contribute, and they're not going to fight against us either, because they have no skin in the game. We are concerned with that 45% of the 60%, because there's a likelihood we have already got 20. And there's a likelihood they've already got 20. Now we're all just fighting for that middle of the road.
Yep. Okay. Initiative 91, for people who just logged on, let's kind of go over that and how it, do you know how it came about? Besides, they just wanted it to come about. I mean,
well, look, I mean, I think honestly, Chris, we would do no different from the consumptive use pro sporting community. If we had all the cards in our favor, we would try to make sure that we had the right people on the commission, we elected the right legislators, that we had the right governor, the right secretary of state, the right attorney general, the right treasurer, that we worked on county commissions, that we would be doing the same thing that they have done. The fact of the matter is, we didn't put up a formidable enough defense from a conservation-minded perspective. And I don't care whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent. We all care about wildlife in some form or fashion. And I have argued with my adversaries before and told them, don't you dare tell me that you care more about wildlife than I. We just care differently, and we have different perspectives because of our different lifestyles and our experiences and what we actually engage in. And I've had very formidable conversations with my adversaries to get them to understand my side. I don't kill everything. I mean, if I did, why would I continue to go do it? I mean, do you know that harvesting a mountain lion in the state of Colorado has a 20% success rate? 20%? Our deer and elk hunting is around 9 to 10. Our deer hunting solidly by itself is around 19. Our bear hunting is less than 25. There's 75% or 80% of the people that go out there and don't harvest anything. And we're paying into the pot, and we're trying to provide conservation efforts. If our adversaries went to the store and only harvested food when they went there 20% of the time, they wouldn't be very successful in survival. We're not doing this for survival. We do it for subsistence to some degree, but we're paying into the system so we have sustainable populations in perpetuity for all parties, for all of Coloradans, for all wildlife species, for all sectors, whether they use it or whether they don't use it.
Let's get into the cost. I think a lot of people don't understand. Is because they're sitting at home, they're watching it on Instagram, they're watching it on TikTok, YouTube right now, they're watching it. Not everybody has the opportunity to get out. You have the opportunity because you're not hunting as much anymore, are you?
No.
I mean, it takes up a lot of not only time, but the money is ridiculous. And I've heard you talk before about how much you would need to be successful, more successful, and that number was 5 million, and you guys would like to have 10 million just in case Arizona gets hit or Utah gets hit or New Mexico gets hit, because you guys aren't just Colorado.
No, and that's an interesting thing, because if you look at statistics, last year in 2022, through legislatures in the United States, there was 469 legislative wildlife-related bills that were introduced to each state legislature. I mean, that's almost, what is it, almost 10 per state. Wildlife legislation, 10 per state. You add citizens' petitions on top of that through game and parks commissions, there's another 800. Then you turn around and look at ballot initiatives, there's around 40. This is such a costly venture and effort to be able to put something up. But what the opposition has done, what the proponents of these measures have done, is structure themselves and align themselves strategically with everybody that is trying to do the same thing. They're trying to take everything away. For the most part, we have argued historically, the elk hunters are arguing with the pheasant hunters, and the bear hunters are arguing with the lion hunters, and the lion hunters are arguing with the trappers, and you can't get a fisherman to support squat unless he actually turns around and owns a gun and goes and hunts. We've been against each other's throats because we've created that model. If you turn around and get people to say just what I said at the beginning of this, we are sportsmen. Just so happens that I'm a member of about 19 freaking different conservation organizations, but I don't walk into a meeting and say, oh, look, I'm an elk hunter. I'm a member of RMEF. No, I go in there and say, my name is Dan Gates and I'm a sportsman and I'd like to turn around and testify on such and such. And I'm here to represent a plethora of different individuals from a variety of different associations that I associate with, but I'm a sportsman first and foremost. We have segregated ourselves unintentionally because everybody's got their little avocation that they like to get to deal with, whether they're a coon hunter, maybe they're a trapper, maybe they like to turn around and go hunt coyotes at night. Maybe they just like to shoot big bucks and they shoot a big buck every 5 years, but they hunt every year. We shouldn't degrade and erode ourselves just because somebody else is different from us. The kicker to that is, Chris, the opposition doesn't look like that. They don't say, oh, I'm an animal activist for prairie dogs. I'm an animal activist for bears. No, I'm a freaking animal activist, and I hate all you sons of bitches, and I want you to be gone, period. Their goal is to take every single one of us on the landscape and do it succinctly, however they can possibly accomplish that, incrementally, systematically, one step at a time, and they start with the low-hanging fruit, bobcats and mountain lions, bears, predators, and however the hell else they can incorporate anything else into that. But the low-hanging fruit is first. It's the most expensive because that's the first chink in the armor. And after that, it's easier than hell for them to accomplish what they want.
Death by a thousand cuts.
Yep.
And so what exactly are you guys doing? Do you like to work to get all, how can you get all the organizations together? What are you guys doing on that? You've mentioned quite a few, and a lot of you guys are working together already.
A lot of us are working together. Yeah. And that was the thing, being proactive. Making sure that we formulated these groups, these causes, have transparency and accountability before we needed to. Most of our causes that we see, mostly in the Western United States, and because I'm on the board on the boards of the FTA and the NTA, I see some of what's going on from the trapping and the predator hunting side on the eastern side of the country. But we formulated stuff proactively, knowing full well that the dragon was at the door, and either we were going to build a big enough door he couldn't blow through, or we were going to turn around and create a big enough house. He didn't want to approach the dragon, or he didn't want to approach the house because of the size of the dragon. Look, I don't have a lot in common with a lot of the people that we associate with because they don't trap, they don't predator hunt. I do all of their stuff. They don't do everything that I do, but they appreciate what we're trying to accomplish and what we've been able to deal with over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, but we did it proactively. We didn't wait to say, oh, look, we got a ballot initiative. Oh, look, we got a legislative bill. You want to get together and go down to the Capitol? No, we, through this Colorado Wildlife Conservation Project that we formulated on the eve of Senate Bill 31 I mentioned, we came together. We've got 31 different organizations, 31 different members, 29 different organizations. We have multiple committees. We meet weekly. We have interactions with the legislature and the commission. We formulate our plans of actions and strategies. And I'm talking groups that most of the people on this call would never think about associating with. Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, National Wild Turkey Federation, Muley Fanatics, Mule Deer Foundation, Ducks Unlimited. You look at the groups that we've associated ourselves with, we might have differences, but we don't have differences when we go to the Capitol. We don't have differences when we're dealing at the ballot. We don't have differences when we go to the commission because we strategize. We know the players. We put a plan of action in place. We know who's going to talk, what they're going to say, what logos are going to be utilized, and how we're going to be able to turn around and formulate that plan to where when we walk in there, they know that they are with us and we are with them. And while we might disagree on some things, when it comes to this, they're going to play hell, turn around and get in our arms to not lock. We don't do that proactively enough throughout the country. And if we did, we would be an undeniable force. And that's what we're hoping to be able to launch after this victory to make sure that everybody else has that playbook, foundation, and roadmap to do the same thing.
Well, baseball team don't practice all year by themselves individually and then show up on the field and try to play together.
No, that's a good analogy. And I like using sports analogies a lot because just because you have a logo, you might have the team, but if the team players don't know what position to play and they don't know what the managerial calls are and you don't know what your strategy is, you're just willy-nilly out there turning around and trying to get your point across. And as I've said many times during the initial parts of this process, do you want to get your point across or do you want to win? And I think that we've decided here in Colorado we want to win.
And Missy said, was Colorado picked as a test or practice, see what it will take via verbiage, then go after the other states? But I think they've done that already in Arizona. They tried it in Arizona. The difference is they used hounds. They tried to get rid of hound hunting for those animals that they're trying to get rid of all hunting, which I think Arizona's probably a bigger hound state than Colorado.
Overall, probably.
For lions and bear, because it's over the counter. Yeah. It's almost all year. You know what I mean? We can hunt bears from August all the way to December almost. You know, there's a couple months in there. We can hunt lions minus 2 months out of the year, 3 months out of the year. Bobcats the same. So, and it's over the counter. You know, that's why I think they're going to go after Utah if after you guys, whether they win or lose.
I honestly believe Utah is on the chopping block, Chris. But I think New Mexico is probably more vulnerable because of the political structure that they have and what they've already accomplished there and what they're trying to accomplish there, because the legislature has done some things that the Utah legislature would not allow. Now, I'm not saying they wouldn't go ballot initiative in Utah, but if they conquer and divide us here, they will have an additional roadmap of a feather in their cap, so to speak, to be able to turn around and go to Utah and not even have to worry about the legislature. They'll just go run a ballot measure.
Yep. And they don't care. If they get rid of mouse traps where you can't kill a mouse with a mouse trap, that is a win for them. Yep. It is a win. They will throw a $1 million party for it.
Last year in Colorado, they attempted to do the animal sanctuary state deal like what they attempted in Oregon. Different people, same ideologies, same network. It didn't pass through the title board and the Supreme Court. Luckily, the agriculture community came out in full force. But it would have essentially made Colorado a sanctuary state to the point to where the ag industry would have been defunct and the hunting industry or the conservation industry would have been completely upended and out of business. And this management system would have been a tax-based driven system that they were fully prepared to turn around and fund by taking you and I and everybody else out of the equation at the same time that they were bringing wolves in and getting rid of all the other components of science-based wildlife management.
People love that. They love sanctuary, animal sanctuary. That just sounds like a little animal rescue. They're there to help. And they'll vote for that because it sounds really good. Yep. It's a good title.
Yep. There's something tonight at 7 o'clock Colorado time, and cats aren't trophies are doing a webinar. And if anybody after this podcast wants to get on, they can get on there and register for that. It's open to the general public, but you can find that stuff out either on their website or on their Facebook page. I'm not just trying to publicize. It's Cats Aren't Trophies at 7 o'clock this evening. And it's a webinar on how they're going to take this to the court and put us on the map.
Cats. Cats aren't trophies?
Yep.
Is there a website to that? Like,
they've got a website for that, and then they've got a Facebook page as well. Wayne Pacelli, with the former CEO of HSUS.
I know him.
Yeah, well, he's in charge of this whole deal, and now he's running an animal welfare action institute along with Samantha Brueger, and then Carol Baskins.
Yeah, I met her.
Yep. Carol Baskins with Tiger King is part of this whole process. So we are dealing with the cream of the crop when it comes to our adversaries. I will tell you that.
So cats aren't trophies. Look them up, Facebook, on the internet, Google them. They're having a webinar. And Wayne got in a little bit of trouble back in the day, and that's why he had to step down.
Yeah, his perspective of you know, they've always said that animals are like people, and animals take precedent over people. Well, that was obvious on his actions, the way he treated other people. Or he wouldn't have stepped down. He'd been in the same position.
How do we donate?
Two things. And I can.
And where does the money go?
Well, right now, everything will go to CRWM. And you can donate through our website, which is at SaveTheHuntsColorado.com. SaveTheHuntsColorado.com. I see you have it on the screen. We've also got a GoFundMe page. Now, let me explain something here. Because we are an advocacy education organization, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, that we're a 501c4. So your contributions are not tax deductible. This is a political campaign. We are not like the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or National Wild Turkey Federation. Those are C3s. But the kicker is they can only donate 10% of their total gross expenditures to campaign type advocacy plans or actions like what we're doing. So our opposition is well formulated because they've got like a dozen, 15, 20, 30 different organizations that if they all can spend 10%, they can kick money into the mothership pot. Our groups are doing so much of the yeoman's work on the landscape. And historically, they haven't had funds that they could turn around and generate and expend toward campaign type stuff. Look, when our organizations were created 30, 40, 50 years ago, they were done for what we all stood for, conservation. But we don't do banquets. We don't do fundraisers. We don't do membership. You don't get a free knife. There's no magazine with us. You donate money here, and it goes straight to our efforts on this
initiative. It goes to a pair initiative. Of boots that you're putting on the ground.
Sorry? Boots on the ground. That's exactly what it is. And it also covers the backside of this on the legislative side and the commission side to help us not get flanked from these oppositions, because they could turn around and give us three or four more ballot initiatives before March 22nd when the deadline is, and we would have to deal with those in the same manner that we dealt with the first one and the second one. All that being said, once we formulate an issues committee, which would then be just for that specific cause, now you look into auditing issues, and you look at independent expenditure issues, and you look at board and directors issues that are completely separate from what we've created, because we do education and advocacy. That issues committee is a campaign-driven deal specific to that. Now, we accumulate contributed and donor money now. 95% of that money is going to end up going to the issues committee anyway. But we can't kick it there yet because we don't have a title. We don't have a title number. And they haven't started out going out and gathering signatures. If we formulated this and then they went out and threw another title at us, we would have to change our whole scope of things and change the title of our organization and figure out how we're going to turn around and formulate our plan of action. So this is a wait and see cat and mouse approach right now, because they're still in the legal process. We're still in the legal process, and we're fighting to the point to where we know they're going to come out with something. We're just trying to draw it out to where we make sure that we come out as best as what we possibly can, and that we have left no stone unturned in the process.
Why is it so hard, instead of a defense, we do an offense? Why is it that hard to, you know, come up with something that we think they're going to do? And everybody talks about making the state in charge of their own get it out of ballot initiative. There's a way to get it out of where it don't go to ballot initiative, where the state is in charge of it.
That in our state anyway, and some other states, then that takes the right legislators to be able to push those pieces of legislation through. And because of the way we're set up, depending on if it's a statutory requirement or if it's a constitutional amendment, we would still have to go to the voters to be able to turn around and get that done because of the way our statutes and Colorado regulations are written. Interesting enough, even if we have enough legislators, which at this point we're so outnumbered, I say outnumbered, we are down 49-16 in the House and 23-12 in the Senate, Democrats versus Republicans. Even if we got a referred measure to allow us to turn around a right to hunt and fish or a right to wild harvest or to change the makeup of a ballot initiative, we would have to go through that process, and then we would have to have the governor sign off on it. We don't have the money to turn around and process that in any way, shape, or form and fight something that is going to be so costly. And because we're so far outnumbered, even if we spend $1 million or $1.5 million, there's a really good chance we would never get it on the ballot because of the makeup of what we are here. That goes back to what other states can do that we didn't do in Colorado 20 and 30 years ago because we didn't appropriately plan from a sportsmen and women community to figure out how we were going to put up that defense that was going to be essentially an offense at the time. And that's another thing we're trying to help other states be able to accomplish. Look, learn from our mistakes in Colorado. We're trying to alter the course of time and history, and we're trying to send back the evil. If we can do that and we can accomplish that, the other states are fully aware of how to conquer the same enemies that we've been able to fight.
You would think we learned from California in the 70s and then just not recently when they got rid of bear hunting.
That's interesting because I don't know what the draw. I know California is a beautiful state. And there's a lot of good people in California, and they had a lot of resources but how they got 29 million people and then screwed things up so damn bad. And then the rest of us watched what happened and we just said, well, that's California, but we weren't smart enough to realize that it was slowly coming across our state borders like locusts on a cornfield. Just because your neighbor had it, you never thought you were going to get it because you did all the proper preparation and stuff. You grew a crop that maybe the bugs weren't coming to until you realized that they ate it all over there, so there was nothing else to eat besides turn around and come to your crop. Yep. We didn't see that from California, Washington, and Oregon.
And it does. It bleeds over. It bleeds over, and it just like putting oil in a water bucket, just contaminating.
Yeah, and where we're at, my common analogy now is like chasing packing peanuts in a windstorm. You can stand there all day long, and if you get one, it's probably going to end up in your mouth, and that's about the only thing you're going to get. And that's where we're at right now. We're figuring out what we need to do, and then they throw something different at us. We don't have the money or the resources to pursue this, and they throw something different at us. But I can tell you, on this particular initiative, on this particular issue, we have garnered more support, more money, more enthusiasm, more backbone, more influence on this issue in 10 weeks than what our predecessors on the Wolf campaign did in 2020 in 19 months. We have done more in 10 weeks than what they had done in 19 months. Now, one thing I want to throw out there is they started off way farther behind than what we are, according to the polls. They started out in the high 60s of a approval rating. We believe that we're somewhere in the mid 50s if we can trust that at this point in time. And some of that comes from the backlash and the buyer's remorse on what people did on the Wolf deal. They thought it'd be cool to have wolves until they figured out, lo and behold, it's not so cool to have wolves. Matter of fact, just to let you know, today there was another wolf kill in North Park on the Gittleson property. The gentleman lost cattle to start this whole process, and we still only have 3 wolves on the ground, and he ended up losing another heifer today. So you got 3 wolves. We've had multiple interactions. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is in the process of putting wolves on the ground by the end of the year. There's a lawsuit that's been filed day before yesterday by the Colorado Cattlemen's Association and the Gunnison Stock Growers Association. Those things play into what we think that we can conquer on our end, because people maybe are starting to realize that maybe the general voters shouldn't be voting on wildlife stuff. maybe the general voter should leave it up to the experts, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and the 350 scientists that work there. That's who they should let manage our wildlife in the state.
And you have numbers. You had numbers about how many hunters are in the United States, and if a million of them dump $10, just that's only a small percentage.
That'd be less than 10% of the population, 10% of the hunter population. If a million sportsmen and women contributed $10 a piece and would be able to figure out a way to put $10 million into this effort, and we only need three or four, and when we defeat this measure, we've built up a plan and a roadmap and a treasure chest that we can turn around and have other states be able to feed off of that continuity and that collaboration. If we come up short and we end up with $1 million or $2 million, if we could turn around and run this plan and we're still victorious, that same plan still needs to be enacted from Washington to California, to from Texas to North Dakota. It's just that we're trying to figure out a way to bring some levity, civility, and decorum to the conversation, to where when we finish stuff, we finish what we started, as opposed to sitting there going, well, now we lost that. Now what are we going to do? We don't want to do that.
Well, you figured out how to get the insects to quit eating your corn. So when they move to your neighbors, you say, hey, check this insecticide out. I got some poison for them in.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and I do a lot of agriculture work just because of my wildlife control business. Maybe you wouldn't be surprised, Chris, but how many people that I've known that were farmers that had problems and problems and problems and problems, and they just got to a point where they threw their hands up and they turned their ground back into CRP, conservation ground, to where they didn't have to worry about the insects, to where the federal government was going to help provide the insecticides or utilization of the landscape. All they were doing is turn around and using it for CRP, and they just threw their hands up. It was easier to turn around and do that. I think that's where a lot of our community is. Let me sell out. Let me move. Let me go to another state. I'll turn around and pick up another avocation. I'll start another business. I'll do something.
What is CRP?
What we really want to do is.
What is CRP?
CRP is the conservation soil projects, to where the government will actually pay a farmer, not the farmer's ground, and put it back into natural habitat.
It's pretty bad when you're probably making more money off that than you are actually growing something.
Yeah. No? And as far as.
But it's either do that or just sell out and have a partner.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You know. And as far as political administrations are concerned, look, you know, not to try to get anybody to go to any specific website or anything, but pay attention to your own damn state. This is not singular to Colorado. This stuff is happening behind the scenes. It's just that maybe you don't know that it's happening in Tennessee, or maybe it's in New Mexico, or maybe it's in Nevada, or maybe it's in North Dakota. It's happening there because each one of these opposing groups that I mentioned, the proponents of these initiatives, have offices and people. Now, maybe they're not as influential in your state because of the gubernatorial administrations or the political landscape, but the demographics are changing to some degree. Maybe they're not changing in North Dakota wholly, but you turn around and look at specific sectors in North Dakota or in South Carolina or in Delaware or in Ohio, this is not a bulletproof deal. The North American model of wildlife conservation, the Pittman-Robertson Act, the Dingell-Johnson Act, the Migratory Bird Acts, the Lacey Acts, all the stuff that was put into place for us to be where we're at now is not written in stone to where it can never go away. If we don't defend it, who the hell else is going to? And that's what we're trying to establish here. We're sick and tired of rolling over and waiting for the politicians to help, not just to stand idle, to help the opposition. That's what they're doing. They're helping the opposition get accomplished what they want to get accomplished by appointments, by money, by committees and boards, by elections. And then they turn around and run the gamut. And if it's not for dumb bastards like me and a bunch of other people to turn around and stand in their way, they will run over us. And when they get done with us, they're coming to another state near you.
They don't like opposition. It don't really take much to get them guys to back down because they're not fighters. They like to really test that water. They really love to test that water.
I'm in the middle of this shit right now that I wish I wasn't in the middle of, because they think that they want to mess with something, but they don't really want to mess with stuff. And You know, they think that they've got the power and the authority and the influence on their side. But, you know, they have a lot on their side. But we have
money.
The history. They got money. But we have the history, the tradition, the heritage. And we need to convince our side, our people, our 10% and our 10% that are somewhat on the fence, to rally up, lock arms, turn around and push this fundamentally, financially, and reasonably and logically across the finish line. And then that middle of the road, that 45% of the 60% middle of the road is going to come to our side and we will win.
All you got to do, that simple, with $10 million.
It's either that or sell your hounds, give up your cage traps, turn around and get rid of your fishing poles, get rid of your bird dog, and don't apply for any other states. Because if we're not going to turn around and put up a fight for what we all support so much, why the hell are we trying to turn around and do what we do?
Yep, moving into an apartment. Who needs to be involved?
Anybody that buys a hunting and fishing license, any state,
even
doesn't matter whether they vote.
And we talked about this, you know, taking a non-hunter, which is easy to turn into an anti-hunter. Non-hunters, people gotta, if you're a non-hunter and you know one and you're a hunter, gosh, try to get them out there. I've took lots of people behind some hounds that never hunted, and they understood it. They had fun. Mm-hmm. I've turned a lot of people non-hunters into hunters. But it ain't hard to turn a non-hunter into a anti-hunter.
Nope. And the biggest thing is right now, just educate your peers. Educate your congregation. Educate your relatives, your neighbors, your coworkers. Educate them about science-based wildlife management. Tell them about the North American model. If anybody's listening to this, they might think that I'm, you know, a little bit sold on specific tasks and elements. If you can't name five of the seven tenets of the North American model, you're part of the problem. How do you turn around and pose the question when you don't know any of the answers? I get in a political landscape more often than most people. And what gripes me more than anything, Chris, is when people say, well, what can I do? Just like what you put on there, what do people need to do? People need to look in the mirror and ask themselves, do you know what congressional district you live in? You know what Senate district? You know what House district? Do you know who you voted for? Do you know who's actually making the decisions for you right now? Because if you don't, you're part of the problem. Because those people are helping to fuel the fire. Those people are helping to turn around and make this juggernaut on their end and not turn around and support us on our end. That's the main issue. It's who we put into office, because those people that are in office are going to play one side or the other. And it's either the extremist side or it's the conservation side when it gets into our wheelhouse. Period.
I think people don't understand that it's kind of like gaining weight. It's real easy to gain weight, just like it's real easy to lose a hunting privilege. And it's hard to lose that weight once you gain it. And losing your hunting privileges, it's like gaining weight. It's hard to get them back. We can't trap since 94, and we'll never get that back, ever.
We lost trapping here in 96, except for cage traps and except for 30-day exemption permits on private property. And that's for agricultural and human health and safety type issues. We could trap with cage traps on public and private, but they're trying to take cage traps away for bobcats, even though we'd still have cages for the other 16 species of fur bearers. But that they don't want any of it. It's a hunting ban, and they want to translate that into whatever the hell they want to translate that into. But it doesn't matter. And I've said this before. It doesn't matter the method to take the season, the species, the reason. They just want it gone.
No, every bit, everything. Their mission is to 100% extinguish hunting across the United States, period. Mm-hmm. And they have no clue. And let's get in real quick, science. We haven't really got into the science part of it. Science, the data, how it's just kind of floating around there. Just floating around.
Yeah. It's easy to say that we have the science because anybody could be a scientist. But people that are working boots on the ground like what we have here, and other states don't necessarily have what we have, and other states maybe might be better than what we have. But out of 1,100 some odd employees for Colorado Parks and Wildlife, there's 350 bona fide wildlife scientists. And the experts on the other side, and even sometimes commissioners and legislators, don't want to take the facts from the scientist. Follow the science here, follow the science there, do this, do that, unless it goes against our morals, ethics, values, perspectives, and opinions. Well, that's the same thing a lot of people did when it came to COVID. Follow the science. No, I don't believe that. We turn around and say, follow the science. They don't believe this. We're at each other's throats about 50% of the time on whatever subject it is. It doesn't matter. But when you got a 9 or a 10 or a 15 or a 25-year study going on, it's not anecdotal information. That's not perspectives. That's science-based wildlife management that is adaptive, that is nimble, and that it can be changed at a moment's notice because of changing landscapes, habitats, demographics, you know, climate conditions, you know, disease, predators, anything can cause that to be able to be changing, but it's adaptive, but it's science driven. And we just need to figure out a way to support that science from our community more wholeheartedly to make sure that we are lockstep with that. I don't agree with every single thing that Colorado Parks and Wildlife says or does, but I would much rather turn around and believe them and trust them and work with them than the guy that runs the car wash or the pool boy or the guy that turns around and does landscaping. Nothing against any of those guys that do that, but I don't want them doing brain surgery and I don't want to manage my damn wildlife.
Nope. And all those people advocating out there on the corner, passing out them fake pamphlets for, you know, Humane Society, most of them are just kind of hoity-toity housewives that have nothing better to do that's never stepped a foot outdoors.
Nope.
Except to get in the Range Rover.
Yeah, and you know, I see a question on here. It says something about the hounds hunting in Washington. I can't speak to that specifically, but I know that our current director from Colorado Parks and Wildlife came from Washington, recently was hired after a 35-year veteran from Colorado Parks and Wildlife retired. And I can tell you that my opinion is that while Colorado is similar, there's a lot of differences in what Washington and California have done. But Colorado has been a different state. So they're maneuvering and adapting their policies and procedures to be able to accomplish what they want. My fear is that they're going to follow exactly what they accomplished in California and Washington, but they're going to add a lot more tools to the toolbox if they get done with us. It'll allow them to have a full ensemble or repertoire, so to speak, to be able to do whatever they need to for whatever state. You stop and look at the difference between California and Washington. Look at the difference between Washington and Colorado. And then look at the dramatic difference between Colorado and Wyoming, or Wyoming and Montana, or Montana and Idaho. They take a little bit of this state and a little bit of that state and a little bit of this state and formulate it together. It's going to be really hard to beat the bastards back if nobody follows the game plan on victory. And if we can be victorious here, we just stopped all of that. Take a little here, take a little there. Now they got to revamp. They got to retool. They got to rearmor themselves. And I'm 100% confident. I mean, it sounds like I'm giving a rah-rah speech before a football game. But I tell you what, we have the chance to be able to kick these sumbitches square and the nuts back to where they came from. And if we are, by 0.1 percentage point, if we're victorious here, they're not going to want to turn around and do this again.
No, especially if you're using the same – if you guys have your little group together, it's like a lawyer. I'm a private investigator, and I have a lawyer where I live that when his name's mentioned, if he's not on our side, I'm like, we're screwed.
Yeah.
When people say, I say, well, who's this lawyer? And they say this lawyer's name that's on their side. I'm like, hey, it's going to be tough.
Yep.
It's going to be dirty. Mm-hmm. So you guys already have like this little, you know, gang formed up. So if you guys go in there and do kick him square in the nuts, and all of a sudden they're over in New Mexico and this guy shows up, gets on that mic, they're going to be like, damn. That's where all the money, if everybody's putting their money into one pot,
yep,
and you get one badass that knows how it works every time, because they do the same thing. They did it in 94 in Arizona. Then they did it in 96 in Colorado for trapping. In Arizona, 2017, they came in, tried to do hounds, 2020 or 21. Might have been 20. I think it was 2021. They did the same thing again. They came back and tried to get rid of hounds. And now, 2 years later, where are they at? In Colorado.
Yep. All they do is move back and forth, just like that locust on the field that we talked about. And and where we are at now, and forever, whoever's watching this podcast, if they're a member of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, for the first time in history, about 2 weeks ago, RMEF just let their members know to go to SaveTheHuntColorado.com, support the Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. First time in history that they've turned around and tried to get other people of their membership to go somewhere else because they're a membership, money-based driven organization. They are behind us. Safari Club International is doing the same thing. Look at the outreach that we've had from guys like you, the Ranellas, the Shockies, the Eastmans, Houndsman XP, the podcast, the Newbergs. The people that are reaching out, Howl for Wildlife, the people that are reaching out to us see the value in these conversations to build this force because they can play the position on the team as opposed to just showing up and go, I want to play ball and just walk out there and five people walk to second base. We don't need that to happen. These other groups, these other entities, the CEOs, the legislative liaisons are like-minded and lockstep with each other to be like-minded and lockstep with us to be able to formulate that team and have position players and have managerial experience to be able to help push this across the finish line. I mean, that's the only way that we could survive, not just here, but in every other state. And we've not done a very good job of that over the course of the last 25 years.
No, hunters, like everybody, anybody on here will tell you they're their worst enemy. You even got big wigs like old Rogan, maybe.
Yeah, they're talking Joe Rogan. I mean, Fox News has reached out. I mean, there's an opportunity here, and it doesn't have squat to do with me. It's about the issue. The big publicity from the other side, you get the Wayne Pacellis, you get HSUS, you get the Animal Welfare Action Institute, you get Carol Baskins, you get Defenders of Wildlife, Cats Aren't Trophies, the Puma Project, Coyote Project, whatever. You put them all together, that's big news. But it's just as big news if we're coming together because we haven't come together like this before. We've had support in different things in Maine and some in Arizona, and maybe it's happened in gator hunting in Florida, and maybe there's been a bird hunting deal somewhere, but not at the epicenter of what was going to turn around and start a launching pad for the opposition. They were taking bites of the apple at different places. This deal here, they're going to take the whole freaking truckload of apples.
They're trying.
We're not going to allow that to happen.
Nope. Everybody needs to come together. Everybody needs to get on. Not real fast. Where's my thing over here? I have your website right there. Donate. No matter, even if it's a dollar, it all goes somewhere.
Give us a chance to build up an army that will in turn benefit everybody else when we win. If we lose, which we're not going to, but if we lose, and people didn't contribute, and they played the armchair quarterback, well, they should have done this and should have done that. Just like I said before about knowing your congressional districts and so forth, then you're part of the problem. We need to be united. I want to support the guy who pheasants hunts in Kansas, and I want to support the guy who wants to go hunt armadillos or turn around and run greyhound dogs after coyotes. As long as it's science-based and as long as it's ethical, moral, and we can turn around and justify it, let's turn around and support it. We need to support every single one of our aspects as long as we can turn around and justify the existence of that with the North American model, science-based wildlife management, fair chase, compile all that information together, build our armies up of our organizations, our entities, and our individuals, and make sure that we work with our game departments and our legislatures and our commissions. This is not an insurmountable task, but the way we're allowing it to happen in front of us while not doing anything, then it looks like it becomes insurmountable.
Well, like if you're not allowed to do anything, and I think you guys talked about this in another podcast, how much money do you spend on dumb stuff?
Yeah.
You can't take $10. Yeah. You can't take $20. You know, go to Circle K. People who smoke.
Yeah.
People who drink. You can't put down one beer, throw $10 towards Save the Hunt Colorado. You know? Because it's not just Colorado. That's what I'm really trying to press here is your guys' mission. Your guys' mission is to to enhance, promote, and defend the North American model of wildlife conservation and responsible wildlife management. Not Colorado's, not Arizona's.
Nope.
America, North American.
Why couldn't we, Chris, be victorious here and then you have something, save the hunt, Arizona, save the hunt, Texas? I'm not trying to franchise this, but this is a tagline that resonates with our community, that if we can turn around and get our guys on the same page, we can have the funds to turn around and talk to that middle of the road crowd, that 60% that we need to talk to. Right now, we can't afford to talk to them in any state. Have Save the Hunt, Arkansas. Have Save the Hunt, Virginia. Have our groups turn around and do something internally before we try to go externally. And I know that it's not beatable. They can't beat that. They can't.
Well, no. And once you guys beat them, they know they can be beat. So they're gonna tread a lot more lightly when they're coming after. And those guys got like $1.5 million stored away just for lawyer fees.
Oh yeah.
Just for their lawyer fees.
It's even more than that on this. I mean, their plan of action is so expensive that when you look at it, you just sit and go, damn, how the hell are we gonna do that? Well, you're not going to do it if you sit on your ass, keep asking yourself how the hell you're going to do it. That's the thing.
Well, they don't sit on their ass and do it. They go out, they get a dollar from everybody in the United States, and they just keep going and going and going.
How many times during the holiday season do we see commercials from the ASPCA send $19 a month to save this puppy, to save that cat? And I'm not saying not to do some of that with your local shelters. But when you're talking about national organizations that are trying to undermine every single aspect of human-animal interaction, I don't think that that's right. But there's a hell of a lot of people that support what we do that pay into that $19 a month to help defeat what we do. It's just that they're not savvy about where the money goes and how it actually trickles down to stop things from happening that are positive, like conservation.
Well, even the Humane Society of the United States, don't they only donate like 1.5%, if that?
It's so minimal.
Very minimal.
My local shelter has said repeatedly, that's the Humane Society of Canyon City, Fremont County Humane Society. And they don't get their money from the mothership at all. It's just that they are called the Humane Society. I keep saying they should call themselves the Fremont County Animal Shelter, to take themselves away from any connection whatsoever.
No, that kills. I think that kills them a lot, especially in like my community. We have a humane society, but we're a hunting community. So when we see any humane society, we're like, yuck.
I see Timothy Brink on there. He says, Save the Hunt USA, Save the Hunt America, or Save the Hunt North America. I mean, anything that we could turn around and do to rally the troops on our side, whether we hog hunt or whether we bass fish or whether we bear hunt.
What there are they going to do when hunting's gone? They're going to go after the fishing, crawdadding, shrimping.
Yeah.
It just trickles downhill.
Every single bit of it.
Well, Dan, I really appreciate you. I know you couldn't be on last week because you had a prior engagement with Mr. Ranella.
I'll tell you what, the remarkable thing about that interaction with Mr. Ranella on Meat Eater. That was a live show that they asked me to be able to participate in. And I'm gracious for the opportunity, but there were 3,000 people. And I just want to give some kudos to this process, because this is something that could happen for anybody. But there's 3,000 people in that room that paid good money to turn around and go listen to Steve Ranella and Giannis Patelis. And I was on there with football great Derek Wolf. They allowed us to have a booth there to be able to turn around and hand out information specifically about Initiative 91. That grassroots outreach doesn't have to happen with a Ranella or a Shockey or anybody else. It could happen at a church congregation. It could happen at a sportsman's club. It could happen at some sort of a school function. Bring the people on board that want to turn around and listen, whether they pay for that opportunity or not, because we're missing the boat as far as messaging. And I saw what happened before, during, and after that specific event. Not only for money, but for recognition and for outreach and people saying, Gates, what do I got to do? How do I help? Where do I go stand? Where do you want me to go testify? How do I get money? That's how we build a coalition up. It's not one guy. It's one guy maybe talking to a bunch of different guys, but then it's me talking to 3,000 and then that 3,000 talking to 6,000. And then those guys turn around talking to another 3,000. Pretty soon you got 35,000 people out of one interaction, and they're doing it for the course of the next 11 months. Every single person on this podcast, whether you got 5 or 5,000 or 50,000, if they take part of this message, part of it, and just translated that into what it affects them on their daily life, we cannot be stopped. Period. They cannot beat a mass force. You can't stop the locusts, especially when they're actually against pesticides and herbicides and everything else. So, I mean, they can't get rid of them.
Yep. Save the Hunt Colorado. That's where you guys are going to donate. Brett already said he's going to throw in $100. I know Timothy Brink got some money. He does. Louisiana Hunting, he can spare some money. Brerly Mason, I know he can. He works. He has a job. He buys all that fresh meat for his dogs, too, so he has money. Them dogs may just have to eat some kibble for a week or two. Well, I appreciate you coming on. You're full of knowledge. That's why you're spearheading. You're full of knowledge. I mean, you're just spreading the word, you know, and it don't take much for any of us. I mean, I'm not no big YouTube star or nothing, but I mean, it takes 2 seconds to throw when I'm editing a video, to throw a quick 5 minute or, you know, 30 second. Hey, this is what it is. Save the Hunt, or, you know, Save the Hunt Colorado. Get over there and donate some money. You know, don't go to McDonald's. Most everybody's obese anyways. Save that. You know, you can't go eat out for less than $15, $20 by yourself. You know, go home and eat a peanut butter bologna sandwich with pickles or whatever you eat. You know, throw a $20 bill over you guys' way, because you're right. You have to have the money. You know, and
gotta have the money. You gotta have the money. And
I'm not knowledgeable enough to go stand over there and talk in front of somebody, because for me, I'm all F you sons of bitches. You know, a lot of us hunters are very blue collar. I'll keep it real polite. You know, we're blue collar. We're not aggressive a lawyer with the right verbiage. That verbiage is super important, and the knowledge. You know, so it's worth me throwing $100 down, having someone go up there, and that's their job. But everybody has to do it.
Everybody
has to do it.
Look at the videos that we've kicked out on the website or on our Facebook page. Look at the last one, and it's a call to action. Look at the professionalism that we're bringing to the table for our message, and that's to our group, to our community, to the hunting and angling hook and bullet crowd. We're just trying to get the message out to our guys. If we can do it to our guys first, then we can turn around and take it to that 60%, that middle of the road crowd. We're just trying to turn around and make sure that we are in it at the latter part of the fight, knowing that we have a puncher's chance to knock the crap out of somebody, as opposed to sitting on the sidelines waiting for something to happen. Thanks, Missy.
I think everybody appreciates just the knowledge. I mean, man, I'm going to tell you right now, kind of made me feel a little, because I don't, you know, you said as far as the North American model, I don't know none of that. You know, my North American model is get away from the game wardens, try to take the road they're not on. You know, I thought that was rule number one. You know,
don't get caught. I mean, it's look, I'm not a religious spiritual individual, but I know the Ten Commandments, and I know what I should and shouldn't do. But mm-hmm. when it comes to something that we're supporting and advocating for, we at least have to know the concept of what those tenets are. And I implore everybody to turn around and research, and they can get that information off of our website, or they can look up the model itself. There's an opportunity there to educate ourselves first, and then turn around and broaden that net and throw it out. And by the time that we're done and over with, I think that we can conquer the world and bring some of this stuff back with a level of civility, decorum, and professionalism. We can set the tone and narrative.
You know, Louisiana Hunting, Jeremy, he said, I wish Dan lived in Louisiana, but you live in Louisiana and you have $20, and your neighbor or your hunting buddies, you know, just like this, it's like a gossip rumor. You tell one housewife, next, you know, that guy tells one or two people, yep. Those two people tell one or two people, you know, and it builds. And that's, I think, getting the word out. That's my contribution. I'll throw money at it. Actually, I got on the day, but I was driving and probably shouldn't drive in text. I'm going to donate to it. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a few people on here that jump on and donate to it. I'll donate. No one works harder than me to feed my dog, though. I go to 15 different. I see what he feeds his dog. I want to be his friend just so I can steal a 5-gallon bucket of the T-bones he feeds his dogs.
Uh-huh.
So
share the videos. If you see the videos on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, share the videos. Help us get the message out. Help us get the message out.
Someone just gave me a super chat. $100 for you and $20 for me. So I'll have to get that. There'll be another $100 donation from me, from old Timothy.
Appreciate it very much. You know, one final thing I'll say, and then I got to go, but I'll tell you what, if everybody would give one day per year and $100 per year to a cause besides a membership, I'm not talking about magazines and memberships, one day per year and $100 per year, this would be undeniable. If they can't do $100, give 2 days. Volunteer to go to your capital, to go to your commission, to turn around and engage with legislators, to join the associations that are actually doing that, and build up your local armament, your state armament, to where when the fight comes to your door and they say, we've got this roadmap, they've already got the army in place. They've got those the player positions already in place.
You have a Facebook page?
Yep, it's Coloradoans for Responsible Wildlife Management.
Okay. Colorado, same as the, your website.
Yep.
There we go.
For Responsible Wildlife Management. The website.
That's for your W. Let me see. I got that right here. Right here, Missy.
Yep.
Coloradoans for
Responsible Wildlife Management.
Save
the hunt, Colorado.com.
I've been saying that all wrong.
What have you been saying? It's
Coloradians.
No, not Coloradians.
I thought there was an I in there.
No, it's Coloradans. Coloradans.
Coloradans.
Yeah, Coloradans. Like Arizonians.
Arizonians. Hey, I appreciate your time, your knowledge. You're doing a good thing. If I got you $5 a night, I'm happy. But I'm sure these guys will share it on there. Everybody can share it. Go to the Facebook. Share the website.
Yep. Save the huntcolorado.com.
Where'd it go?
Save the huntcolorado.com, and it goes right to the CRWM website.
Save the huntcolorado.com. Share it.
Yep.
Share it. I shared it on my Facebook today. I shared your video with behind the cast. Behind the cast. That's where I get most of my information. So I can ask you, but you're so knowledgeable on it. I don't hardly have to ask you nothing. You just go.
Well, when you're full of crap and you know the subject matter, it's easy to turn around and spew it out. So,
if you tell the same lie every day.
Yeah. You just keep going over. One thing I would like to say is this progresses. If you're interested in more information, like when we get down to May or June or July, it might be reasonable to ask an opportunity, because at that point in time, the message is going to change because the audience is going to change. Then we'll be looking at target voters, which is not necessarily your audience. But everybody on this cast, I bet, knows somebody in Colorado. And if they don't live here themselves, they come and visit here, or they come and hunt here, or they
recreate. You said before, you gave a number to how many people are in Colorado a year, and then how many people usually have boots on the ground in Colorado a year. Like 11 million, right?
5.9 million people live here. 84 million people visited here. And in any given time, any time of the day, at any given day, there's between 7.6 and 11.1 million people in this state on any given day. Somebody knows somebody that lives, works, drives through here or something. And if they don't hunt here themselves, maybe they ski here. And if they don't ski here, maybe they just turn around and come and recreate here. We need your damn help. We're just trying to.
It goes back to this right here. How does 91 affect other states? Because when those 80 million people come through there and they stand on a corner and they take a pamphlet, and they go back home, what are they going to donate to?
Yep.
They're going to donate to them people because they sold them a good story.
Yep.
Boo-hoo. Majestic lions, poor little bears, you know, cute little bobcats. So, You got a dinner to go to.
I got a dinner appointment. I have a breakfast appointment, and I got a 4-hour wildlife council meeting tomorrow. So
you're gonna get fat.
I'm gonna stay around my wife during Christmas season. I'll get fat anyway. I'll tell you that. So
so maybe it's better you leave more often.
Yeah, she. I don't know if I'm married to a combination of Betty Crocker and Martha Stewart at Christmas time. So,
yeah, and you can't say no to food. No, I appreciate it. Save the Hunt, Colorado, everybody. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing what you do. And I'll probably pop you on every once in a while and get updates, as I'll keep in touch with you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity. You guys have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and as I always say, aim small, miss small.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.